We're not monetized.
We have ads in the middle of the episode, Cassie.
Yeah, Zach. We lose money from those ads.
We owe all of them money. They are mad at us for all of the ads.
Yeah, as in me, the writer. I owe myself money.
Everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Who Is My Doctor?
Who is my doctor?
Who is indeed? I'm your host, Zach, and I know a lot about Doctor Who.
And I'm also your host, Cassie, and I do not know a lot about Doctor Who.
And today we're looking at David Tennant's penultimate special,
mm-hmm.
The Waters of Mars.
Ah, yes, The Walters of Marlborough. That's a Barbara Walters joke for you.
How long have you been sitting on that since I told you this episode is Water of Mars?
When we turned on the TV and I saw that it was called The Waters of Mars. And then I went, The Walters of Barbara.
Yes, this is
Barbara.
This is David Tennant's second to last special. This came out in November of 2009.
Rip.
Yep. We're coming to the end here. We're in the end game now.
We're in the end game now.
What might you be expecting from the Waters of Mars?
I would expect water.
Okay, that's one.
On Mars.
Wow. You know, sometimes when you're right, you're right. You know?
Yep.
Really hit the nail on the head with that one.
Well, because this was also before battery low, it's getting dark.
Battery low, it's getting dark. Oh, from you mean?
Yeah, the Mars rover.
The Mars rover. Yeah, okay.
It took me a second. Got stuck in a ditch. The last thing it said to itself was, "Battery low, it's getting dark."
Yeah, I had made the Endgame Marvel joke. My brain first went to, "Hey there, big guy, sun's getting real low," and I'm like, "That's not what the quote is, Cassie."
No,
but no,
I just think about how every year it would sing itself "Happy Birthday."
Oh,
yeah. This sad little rover. Don't look into it if you're sensitive.
Yeah, if you're the kind of person that can get attached to a Roomba, don't do that.
No.
However,
why do you think we don't have one? Because it would break my heart seeing it get stuck everywhere.
Well, as you can see from the thumbnail here, this episode has its own little rover of its own. That little robot fellow's name is Gadget.
Gadget.
And Gadget is, as you could see from his variety of tools, is good for a number of things, but he can really only say one thing.
Gadget.
You're going to guess Gadget?
I guess so. What else could it possibly say?
Okay, so Cassie's prefacy is that Gadget can only say Gadget.
Or affirmative.
Engaging defense mode. No, it was maximum defense mode.
And, but it can only say the one thing.
Yeah, it can only say one thing.
Is it a verb or is it? It's not a verb.
It's a single word.
I suppose. Yeah, I'll say Gadget because I have nothing else to go off of.
OK, I was just curious if something was like popping in your head there.
Yeah, but the only other thing that I think would be hilarious, it's unlikely, is if it would just go, whoa.
It's just voiced by
J.G. Quintel.
Yeah, J.G. Yes. Quintel from regular show.
Whoa.
Yeah. That'd be really funny.
Yeah, that's very unlikely and not the case.
Just the robot constantly goes, bitch. Oh, bitch.
Robot's just really on a hot streak and just goes, cunt. Whoa! Robot, stop.
And I don't want to spoil this story too much for you. So I tried to keep these prefaces to be a little disconnected from the story itself. So I'll tell you that this episode takes place on a base on Mars, as you can tell from the title.
Satellite 5.
Satellite 5 was just in the air.
I don't care.
We never go back to Satellite 5 again.
Fucking better not.
We really don't.
Go back to satellite 5 or I will flip everything over
although
in
you
this
will,
house.
I am going to ask you to name the base for me, though, because it
is satellite 4.
It is named after
satellite 69.
It is named after
satellite 420.
It is named after a famous British musician.
Damn it.
And so
my first response, I know I'm immediately wrong.
You want to say it in the mic?
Bono.
Bono.
He's Irish. He's Irish. I know he's Irish.
Welcome to Bono Base One.
Everybody calm down. I spent so many years learning U2 trivia. I know Bono is Irish. Let's move on with the bit. Paul McCartney.
Paul McCartney?
Like McCartney Base, like that. That would be
McCartney on Mars.
Like, I'm trying to think of any other British musician, and it's just one of the other Beatles.
Lennon, Base One.
Well, yeah, that's the thing, though, is it's like, okay, cool, yeah, McCartney, Lennon, Starr, Harrison.
Starr Base.
Yeah.
Just, so that's kind just of what, Ringo messaging you from Mars. I'm warning you with peace and love. I will destroy the Earth from Mars. Peace and love.
Is it Starr Base? That feels weird that you would say it's based off of a British musician and it's just Starr.
Yeah, well, that does sound kind of weird.
I'm going to say it's Starr.
You're going to say Ringo Starr? To help you, I don't know if it helps you at all, but I will say it was so named because they have a song about the planet Mars.
No, he's American. And they weren't even making music then. Wait, no, they totally were. Oh no, Zach, something you need to look at in the kitchen.
What over here?
Oh no. Oh, I forgot what I left it on.
What could be over here in the kitchen that needs my attention so much? I don't know what could be. Is it something here on the floor? Or maybe over here on the ceiling?
I don't
know.
No, any songs.
Any secrets here in the oven? Hello?
What? Who, me?
Cassie, you're on your phone?
Besides,
are you cheating on the Profassi?
Didn't even help because I only... So I've been on a Jared Leto kick lately. Don't at me. So all I can think about is 30 seconds to Mars.
I kind of wanted to know what you were going to think.
Yeah, specifically they did a cover of Kanye West's another... wonderful role model.
Jeez.
But they did a cover of Stronger and it's so good. Fuck. Okay. But they're not British. I just needed to go on a tangent so I could think some more.
All right.
Turns out that didn't work.
All righty.
A song about Mars.
Mm-hmm.
At me if I'm wrong. John Lennon's British, yeah?
Yeah, John Lennon's British.
Does he have a song about Mars? No, it has to be one of those other fuckers. Like, John Bon Jovi.
Bon Jovi is American.
Okay.
I believe he's from Jersey.
Didn't know that. Because they're...
To be fair, when you, Bono and Bon Jovi, I could see you thinking they're
okay,
both from like
fun fact,
similar regions.
Okay, there are several of those artists that were all kind of... in the same circle mm-hmm. when I was growing up, truly did not know that there was a difference until like a couple years ago. I'm going to pivot my response then and say that it's David Bowie. He's from the UK, right?
Yeah, he's from the UK.
Okay, it's just, hey, you know.
You got a lot of songs about space, so if you're going to take a...
Yeah, I think if I'm going to take a... Because truly, I don't think I'm wrong with a Beatles reference.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he specifically is like, wasn't he Ziggy Stardust?
Yeah, Ziggy Stardust was David Bowie.
Okay, yeah. So I'm going to go with Bowie.
All right.
I feel like that is a very good... If I'm wrong with that, then...
You were never going to get it at that point.
No, because my other options were Bono, John Bon Jovi, and then David Bowie. Only one of them is from the UK.
and all four Beatles. You had listed those at some point.
I did list all four Beatles. All only right. Their last names, though. Because, hey, I don't think I'm that far off, though, with Ringo Starr. And you being like, it's named after a musician. Like, yeah, it's also an astrological body, you dummy.
Well, we will find out together as we watch this episode. But before we get into it, this isn't for a prophecy point. I just am curious what this sort of starts gurgling in your brain. So this episode features an idea called the Time Lord Victorious.
Here I am once again, feeling lost, but now and then I breathe it in and let it go.
I had no idea you could do any part of that theme song, let alone so much of it.
In my victory, just remember me when I make it right. That was one of my favorite shows.
That's funny because I mean, this is really the sign of our slight age gap is that I only know that show exists. I know nothing more about it than
I
that.
I had such a crush on Evangelia.
Mm-hmm.
And also I wanted to be like Jade,
mm-hmm.
Because she had a hot boyfriend and also she was like mean and nasty, but still everybody wanted to be your friend.
Mm-hmm.
And she's the token goth of that show. And then of course, like, simple, sweet, probably traumatized and molested Ariana Grande.
That's
being Cat.
And I've only seen clips of that show. I could not tell you.
But yeah, I was always shocked and amazed that everybody was like okay with Jade because she was so mean.
I can't comment on that show.
She was really hot.
That's probably why people were okay with her.
Yeah, and also they're in high school. They had the grease. They had the grease phenomenon where they're all in high school. They were definitely like 25. Like, I think in Quiet on Set, somebody makes a comment about how the Victorious kids would all go out and get drinks after work. And it was like, okay, sick. They were definitely then either bringing in underage kids into bars or they were all over 21, which I can't believe either one of those scenarios.
Well, unfortunately, the show, it does not have anything to do with the Nickelodeon show Victorious.
I'm really proud of myself for busting that out.
Do you have any sincere thoughts as to what the Time Lord Victorious could be?
In my victory, just remember me.
So is that a
when
no?
I make it right.
I'm going to take that as
when
a
I make
no.
It shine, it's make it shine, because that's what was in her locker, too. Because I was like, the thing is, everybody got to decorate their lockers in something really cool. Some people had like monster theme or like somebody had goo coming out of theirs.
Off topic.
Some of them had goo coming out, and hers, like, I just remember that was like the big thing for the pilot episode, was her trying to figure out how to decorate her locker. And then she just like puts a make it shine, like neon sign on it. And everybody's like, oh, that's so good. So good. So original. Like, bitch, she got that at Ross. That not good or original. This kid put bottle caps all over his. You know, if they had them, somebody else would have had a wall of fidgets. That kid was not autistic. Space Time Lord Victorious.
Mm-hmm. I will tell you, it is a moniker that the doctor gives himself.
What is moniker?
It's a name, like a title.
Okay, not. I know my mom, her name is Monica.
Moniker. M-O-N-I-K-E-R.
He can Monica. Just call himself Monica?
No, he's...
Monica. No, she's a pirate now.
He bestows himself the title of Time Lord Victorious.
Is it because of that one time when nobody died? Because lately we've just seen the doctor being like, oh, fuck, so many people die around me. Oh, geez, Rick.
You know, I guess we could... That's a pretty solid guess, I think, is just the doctor has, like, decided that now he gets to be the arbiter of life and death.
Yeah, I feel like, because we've seen both, we've seen him being absolutely enthralled at the fact that everybody is alive and mm-hmm. is good. But also lately, we've been seeing way more of the doctor facing the fact that most of the people that he surrounds himself with, whether they like willingly like or unwittingly,
mm-hmm.
those people ultimately go away from him.
Mm-hmm.
So I could see this as an attempt for the doctor to make himself feel better about that fact and say, you know what? I'm dubbing myself Time Lord Victorious because I am doing a positive mental health thing. He's not calling himself fat, stupid, or ugly. He's saying, oh, man, I'm really sad, but in like a cutesy way.
I'm so very sad, but I'm so hot. I'm so hot and sad. Yeah,
God, like so many people leave me. I am so very alone, but I'm the best in every galaxy. I'm super awesome, victorious. But God, do I wish I had a friend. But I don't. Who needs a friend when they're wonderful?
Well, let's find out together as we watch The Waters of Mars.
Ah, yes. The Waters of Marlboro.
Today's episode of Who Is My Doctor is brought to you by the Slapkins Diet. The Slapkins Diet is very easy. Here's how it works. Down, fat. Get out of here, fat. You'll never amount to shit in this world. You're just like your father. Truth be told, I have no idea if this works, but it's certainly cheaper than going vegan or going to the gym, so go away, fat. Let me get back to the podcast already. And we are back from the Waters of Mars.
So Barbara Walters was not in that episode.
No, no, no.
Although Brooke kind of looked a little bit like her.
No, but you know who you know who was in that, Cassie? It was Gemma Chan as our first named Asian character.
Hooray!
another one of the members of the bit part in Doctor Who goes on to enormous fame sweepstakes that we have here.
I'm really mad, though, because her name was very white sounding, which is also fine. That's typically the case.
So
it's so white. I forgot what it was. Gemma Chan. What else is she in?
I think the most prominent, the biggest thing she's in was The Eternals. She was Cersei in The Eternals. Mm-hmm. She also was in another Marvel movie. She was in Captain Marvel as Minerva. She was one of the Kree. Probably less recognizable in that because she was covered in blue makeup.
Quite a bit of blue on this one,
Gemma was playing Mia.
Oh, yeah. Mia Bennett.
Yes, yes. But let's get to maybe more of this a little bit later. Let's start with the broad point. What did you think of The Waters of Mars, Cassie?
I was correct.
You were correct on the Profassi points.
I was correct.
You were also correct on what the Time Lord Victorious was kind of about.
Yeah, more or less.
I mean, there's a...
I think that in my... In a collegiate essay roundabout sort of way, I could rodeo my answer and make it fit and make it work.
Yeah, I mean, there are other things going on with it, but one of the premises is that the Doctor is like decides for a moment feels like he gets to decide who lives and who dies.
Yeah, the Doctor gets to play God, as it were.
And you know, there's aspects to that of him having sort of a reverse survivor's guilt, where he has survivor's pride, where like he's decided that because he's the last sort of the Time Lords, that means he's the chosen one, and gets to now the laws of time are at his command.
He even alludes to a point that he's been following the rules of Time Lords that are long gone.
Yeah, there's no one there to enforce those rules. He was just following them anyway.
He followed them in the sake of tradition, it seemed. But now he's at a point where there really isn't a point to follow along with those.
Yeah, it's a bit of a shame that they do away with it as quickly as they do, because you could get a whole season out of that idea.
We're not going to get more... Dark Urge Doctor.
I mean, he's only got one story left. Well, after that, I mean, every doctor is different. Their brain effectively scrambles and they come out with, you know, I think we described it with Eccleston is that they have all the same knobs, but the dials are set at different levels.
God, I would love to see an Eccleston Dark Urge Doctor.
Now, I will say that if you really do like the idea of the dark Time Lord Victorious Doctor stuff, the audio dramas have really picked up that story. They have a whole arc of basically a timeline where David Tennant follows down that pathway of the Time Lord Victorious.
Okay.
And it's some interesting stuff. There's some other media. I think they have comics and books too that tie into it, but because the show doesn't really get the time to do that because after Tennant's run, Russell T. Davies is no longer the showrunner. But it's certainly an interesting idea of the Doctor that has decided that if he is the only Time Lord, then he is the Time Lord.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting that it comes up so much of the episode really is sort of building up to that moment too.
Mm-hmm.
Like there is this story here, but so much of the story is just the Doctor is in a situation that he knows is a fixed point in time and can do nothing.
Which I was wondering how long it was going to be before we did get a Pompeii callback. Because that was I think one of the first times that we as the audience are introduced to this concept of fixed moments in time and space.
Yeah, no, I don't know if it was the very first, but it was certainly the strongest beat for it, if nothing else.
Well, because that was the first time then that we had somebody like Donna, who was extraordinarily human to the point mm-hmm. of insisting that the Doctor also be human. You be empathetic.
And you really get the idea that the Doctor is really a character of extremes. It really is like an all or nothing for him.
He's autistic.
Yeah, because there's a part of it where, you know, when he's with Donna, he won't save anybody until Donna says save someone. Just save anybody, like until he saves one family. But then Donna's not there and he listens to her anyway. And he's like, okay, now I get to save everyone in the universe all the time forever. That's the lesson I learned from this.
When did he save all of the universe? Because even right now, it was less a save everybody in the universe and more a decision of if he's going to save this crew of. I'm trying to count.
Well, it was at the end. I mean, he never really did it, but there was moments at the end where the Doctor was saying things like.
Oh, to Brooke about like,
yeah, to Brooke about what
your death is the future.
Yeah. And at the end of the episode, he's like, well, now you can do whatever you want. And she's like, but that could change the whole of human history now because of it. You've changed the future. No one should have that much power. And his only response is tough. Like, what the fuck?
Well, because there's also something to be said then of her actions from that point thereafter. Yes, she still dies, but could you imagine understanding that your mother is 9 months of space travel away
mm-hmm.
and then waking up and not only or like seeing her dead body and knowing that there's no way between the time that
you called her that morning.
Yeah, you called her that morning. And then she was dead that same day, your day. She's dead that same fucking day.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's also repercussions with those actions as well. Because now she didn't die victoriously in space.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't go down with her ship. Sort of against her own will, though.
Yeah. And the Doctor starts having these moments early on when he first decides to save them that he starts yelling stuff out like the laws of time will obey me. Like it feels to me, it feels very clearly like if Adelaide had not done something drastic, like commit suicide in that moment, the Doctor probably would have gone on to just make the timeline as he saw fit. Because he's the only one who can travel along it, I guess, besides. Well, even then, in this case, the Daleks are technically gone again. They do that. He keeps resetting the Daleks to zero and they keep coming back anyway. Let's back up a little bit, though.
Well, let's take it back from the top because my favorite part of the episode was.
State your name, rank and intention.
The Doctor. Doctor. Fun.
Especially the way Tennant delivers it.
Fun.
Yes, the Doctor gets taken aboard this Bowie Base One, which was, you were correct, it was David Bowie.
Ooh.
And he was taken in by a robot named Gadget.
Gadget.
Who can really only say Gadget. So, yes, you were correct on both counts there.
Go Gadget.
Yes. And the Bowie song in particular I was talking about is a song called Life on Mars. I say it that way because there's a question mark at the end of the name.
I don't think you know the name of the song, Zach.
Life on Mars?
You're having to think about it.
Life on Mars? And what's interesting about the story is that it sort of just cycles the same beat of someone gets infected, people run away. Someone gets infected, people run away. And they keep like just condensing it down to different places they can run away.
That seems to be the case. This basically was not a game of Among Us.
You're not wrong. Only it's really obvious who are the imposters, but the imposters can't not be ejected.
No, the imposters happen to be water.
Yeah. And what a design for them, too, with this like.
Yeah, I just wrote desert water clown.
Why clown?
Just because it was the specificity of. Like the amount of stuff happening around their mouth. And I have a very strong association with like clown makeup, just being like the overdrawn, like,
you want to know how I got these scars?
I mean, yes. Yeah. It was like gothic Joker, as if the Joker needed to be any more goth.
Specifically Heath Ledger's with like the literal, like stuff
scars around his face.
Let's put some water in that face.
Let's put some water all up in that jacket.
And it's not just like the craggly mouth, though. It's the fact that they're constantly leaking.
Yeah, they're salivating so much. And their eyes are white, too, which I do. I always really like the use of those, like, not white out contact lenses, but the ones that make your pupils like completely white. Just because that's scarier to me.
Yeah.
And they did make it a point of having the one Maggie, I think was her name. She didn't have them, but I was wondering how much of that was story and how much of that was the actor literally cannot wear contact lenses.
I mean, they made an interesting case for it where it was sort of.
Well, yeah, that's kind of why I was like, yeah. Oh, that's interesting that she's the only one that doesn't have those, because they do use those later on as indicators that people have turned. Jumping to the end of the episode, we do see Ed, the like second in command.
Mm-hmm.
He's like turning. But instead of, or like, you only know that he's turning because he like closes his eyes, looks down a little bit. And then when he opens them, he has the scary contacts as he's pressing the detonator for the entire ship and base to explode.
Yeah. Just.
And even that small indication of like his eyes have changed, you know, like, oh, we're doomed. This whole situation is fucked.
And I also think that there might be some kind of interesting metaphor here, because when Adelaide is, when there's a moment where the doctor is talking to Adelaide.
It's been chaos back home. 40 long years. Climate, the ozone, the oil apocalypse. We almost reached extinction.
And I can't help but wonder if there is sort of a metaphor for climate change here, where it really is like the water is coming to get you.
Because I wrote it down. Water always wins.
Because if you think about, like, right now, one of the things they're dealing with is the icebergs melting.
Mm-hmm.
That's the water coming for you.
The water always wins. Well, because, like, even think about, like, natural disaster.
Mm-hmm.
If there is if there's a massive fire, what do you use to put out a fire?
Water.
Is it earth? Is it air? Well, I guess if it's a birthday candle. But.
You know, those natural disasters of birthday candles.
There's so many. Hey, have you seen 99-year-old birthday cakes?
Happy birth. Oh, God.
People be crazy. Anyways. But I think it's
the fire from a gender reveal party.
I'm still angry about that. I fucked up my commute for so long.
I forgot we lived in that area.
Yes.
Oof.
It fucked up her commute. And then there was a day not long after it had started where there was a fire not like 3 blocks from our house on the hillside. And the entire day I was like, hey, gang, I might need to go home like now.
Congratulations. It's a bomb.
Congratulations. It's a. But even think about something like a tsunami. We are surrounded by ocean, and the ocean and the land typically have a pretty chill understanding until the one time the land goes, uh-uh, I want to start moving around and stuff. And then the ocean goes, bet, bet. And then, you know, you have this slow moving, but incredibly fast force of nature that just wrecks shit everywhere. Even on a smaller scale, regular like floods. People's houses just fucking flood if it rains too much.
Yeah, or, I mean, if you don't think about it in a natural sense, the Grand Canyon, that was just water.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was water just telling Earth, guess who's my bitch? You are, Earth.
I want to go right here. Do you ever think about the fact that the river is still running through the Grand Canyon? So we will just continue to get more Grand Canyon.
The canyon will just get grander.
The canyon will just get so, like, there will come a time in Earth's evolution where that canyon is so deep that you can't see the bottom of it.
Wow.
That's just a theory. A nature theory.
One of my favorite bits in all of television is an episode of the Flintstones where they go visit the Grand Canyon. But because of the Flintstones, it's literally just like a little trickle of water. Mm-hmm. And they're like, well, one day it could be something.
Like, that's stupid.
It's a good bit. That's one of my favorite jokes in all of television history. One of the things that we talked about is when they got onto the ship, they cut to the people currently gardening. And they pull out the cleanest carrots you and I have ever seen in our lives.
God, we have carrots in our fridge right now that
have been washed.
I got them in Costco. It's the 6-pound bag of carrots. Don't ask why I got 6 pounds of carrots. That's none of your business.
And I wanted them, Doc.
Get out of here, bugs. I don't like that we both said the same joke. Zach.
I can tell when I'm not wanted.
Get out of here, bugs. Anyways. Yeah, the cleanest carrot. And it's the carrot. It's the bite from the carrot that causes Andy to like start twitching out.
Yeah, because he washed the carrot. This already pristine, bright orange carrot. He washed it.
I did not perceive it as, or I didn't put that two and two together. I put it as because the carrot was being grown in this biodome with the water that was infected, then the carrot therefore was infected.
Yeah, I mean, they play with that theory just a little bit because they talk about in the middle of the episode where the doctor's like, I don't know when the water came in here, because we've established that the water can get in you and not take over right away, or it can wait until it's ready to take over for. So they could have been infected for days.
Okay, it's like cooties.
Yeah, and it's not really confirmed until later that the water only just got in that day because that had been filtered out beforehand. There was just a filter that was missing, or a filter that was broken, rather. So really, it was only when he washed that carrot that everything went to shit.
Gonna wash that virus off of my carrot. I'm gonna walk. Never mind. There's a song that's like, I'm gonna wash that man right out of my hair.
There's some tragic irony in him trying to wash the carrot off for it to be cleaner, just for him to cover it in a murderous virus that kills all of his friends.
Yeah, and a desert clown virus that dooms the rest of the mission.
It's kind of interesting that they set this so soon, if that makes sense.
Yeah, because it's 2059. I mean, when you consider that, since the moon landing, basically, in mm-hmm. the in the 60s, if you believe in such things, there has been talks about going to other planets since that mission was successful. Mm-hmm. And especially now, and particularly within the past, we'll say 20 years, the ongoing conversation about expanding humans' reach to other planets because of the havoc we are wreaking on our current planet.
I mean, Elon Musk tells us how every year we're only 10 years away from getting onto Mars. Every year for like 15 years, he's said that.
Well, because there's also the part of like, we know that we can make it to Mars. It just takes a long time.
Yeah, it would take, I mean, they say it would take 9 months, but it's set in 2059. And.
But yeah, that really isn't that far away.
Yeah, it's really not far away from now. It wasn't even far away when it first aired. It was only 50 years. And they even let it be a plot point that Adelaide, who's clearly the oldest of the group, was alive for the end of the last season.
Mm-hmm.
Because we get a little flashback of her
interacting with what you dubbed Peter Pan Dalek.
Yeah, because she's just standing in the attic and looking out the window, and all you see are the stars. And he flies up to the window and just picture him going, "Wendy Moira, Angela, darling, have you seen my shadow? Do you keep it in your trunk?"
I have nothing to add to this bit. I'm so amused. Keep going.
And then as he turns around and flies away. And I like that they established that Adelaide was inspired to go to space because the Dalek. Because she didn't know why, because she wanted to follow the Dalek into the stars. Little did she know, is because the Dalek was like, "Oh, I can't kill you because killing you would break time. I would kill you so hard, but it would break time."
Second star to the right and straight on to morning.
That's exactly what I thought when the Dalek like turned around to fly away
into the stars. Into the
let's go.
Think of a wonderful thing. My God, what do you think a Dalek's...
You can die.
Shut up, that's so good. I was just
you, Adelaide, can't die, but you can die.
What do you think a Dalek's happy thought is?
I mean, it's got to be extermination, right? They're getting to take a break from its like big exoskeleton to just like hang out in this little tank.
God, he's just Michael.
Relaxation.
It's just Michael in the Broadway Peter Pan. It's just candy.
Candy.
We need more Dalek ephemera in our house.
I always appreciate when the show brings in moments like that where it can really tie the seasons together. It doesn't always get to do that, partly because I think the show was so serialized for so long,
mm-hmm.
that it was more really more about just like watching these 4 to 6 episode stories and you could pick it up, put it down. And so there's echoes of that in the way the shows run now, where really we only get these season-long arcs, and they don't necessarily tie together. But Russell T. Davies is really good at coming back to things, at least thematically, if nothing else. It makes me really curious how his future seasons are going to run with the current Doctor, because he hasn't done that yet.
So this happens more?
Well,
like inter-series.
Well, Stephen Moffat has some running things. Chris Chibnall doesn't really have a lot of running things, but I don't know how much of that is his fault or how much of that is COVID's fault, and how much of that is that he only really had one Doctor. He has one really strong idea that is really divisive for a lot of people. I love it. Other people don't, and I get it. Because it's a really strong decision, and we'll get to that eventually, but I'm getting ahead of myself again.
We might get to it.
No, we might get to it. That's really far away. You might get sick of me by then.
Nah, not as long as you keep silly little Dalek impressions around.
There's that moment where the Doctor and the crew, along with Adelaide, are walking down the hallway, and the Doctor's like, "I don't like robots. You make them all do silly, funny things like you're making them beneath you." And then the guy who runs Gadget, he's like, "Yeah, my sister has a robot. She made it look like a dog." And he goes, "Well, dogs are different."
I know. I loved that.
Affirmative. That was a joke just for you, Cassie.
It really was. I even wrote that down.
But then later on, Gadget gets a little upgrade.
Well, the Doctor specifically upgrades him.
Runs his sonic screwdriver over it so it can shoot flames out its back, and that means it's going fast.
Go, go, Gadget Lightning McQueen mode.
Go, go, Gadget ka-chow.
Thank you.
Gadget, ka-chow.
Gadget. Meow.
There's something about the voices they give to robotic things in this show that's very fun.
Because they're, it's like the most robot voice.
Like there's so little like emotion behind this one.
There doesn't need to. He
and somehow
said
less
the
emotional
words.
Than Cybermen.
Gadget. Yeah, because even K-9 had affirmative.
And I had joked that at the time when Gadget's got his little like flame coming out of him and he's like flying down real fast, the guy that is supposed to be controlling him but is instead being kind of controlled by Gadget is going, whoa! And you sort of got what you asked for, Cassie.
I did, kind of.
He says both Gadget and his owner goes, whoa!
That's it, Zach. We can't copy each other anymore. That's the third time.
I do like that the Doctor has that little arc with him where he doesn't like Gadget and then he upgrades Gadget. And then by the end of it, he's like, who needs Adam clamps? I have a funny robot.
Yeah, they put Gadget back into his room, which is just so conveniently exactly where they all end up by the end of the episode.
Well, there's also something, you know, thematic to that, too, where he talks about how he doesn't like humans using the robots like that because it puts robots, it's putting the robot beneath the human. But then as the Doctor becomes the Time Lord victorious, now he's the one piloting Gadget. He is the one who is using something that is beneath him. And it sort of ties back into the end of the episode again, where he says, I've only saved little people before, never someone important like you.
It's so fuckboy of the Doctor.
Yeah, it's just a very interesting, like, dramatic turn.
It makes the Doctor sound like a Reddit user.
Doctor,
am I
incel.
The asshole for saving a captain?
Am I the asshole for saying that I saved someone and she's not one of the little people?
Male, 900 and some odd years old. I was going to go on to a whole, am I the asshole? Because I've been reading a lot of Reddit stories lately. Not proud of that, but they're fun.
I will say, I do think that he mentions how old he is in the next episode. So we'll get to that. And then I do like that because the villain was water, they found a few different ways to use the water.
But just by making everybody soggy? Yes.
Yeah, what I mean is they had first just dripping from the mouth. And then they had, like you said, they come back to them and they're just like completely damp.
They come back to them and the one is shooting the other in the face with water.
Yeah, I called it a baptism is how I put it in my notes.
Yes.
It's a Martian baptism. And then when they're trying to break in the door, he opens his hand up and shoots water out of it like he's Spider-Man.
Oh, I didn't clock that.
Yeah, he's breaking like a hermetic seal. His way of doing it is just like shooting water out of his hand. There's one where
out of his jacket.
Yeah, where the two guys get on the roof of the building because they don't need air anymore. They breathe water, which they also and they somehow also make water. Like there's a part of it where they stretch it a little thin, but it's fine.
Yeah, they are made of the disease is able to survive and thrive in humans because we are 75% water. Mm-hmm. But also in doing so, they create so much more water while also completely drying these poor fools out.
And so they climb up on the roof and they start just gushing it out of their mouths with I will say not a great effect, probably not the one they spent most of their money on. It's just I'm going bleh. And then the one that made me laugh was when it starts cracking through the ceiling and dripping down in these like water walls.
Yeah.
Or as I called it, there it is. The bad side of water.
Yep. Which like I know in the it is fun to see something that I interpret as like, oh, boy, playtime now being evil bad because I see curtain of water and I go, fuck, yeah, we're in rich person pool. There's this really sexy wall of water that I get to swim up and underneath. But now in this space station, water, bad. Water separate this poor German mother.
I mean, Doctor Who's really good at that. I mean, what are weeping angels if not just a villainized game of red light, green light?
You know, you got a point. Just the Doctor after they enact like Is it Act 1? Code 1.
Oh, Action 1.
Action 1. He knows that this is a fixed time in time, mm-hmm. and starts walking out. And before he, like, leaves, he can't get out of the station because the captain has locked the door.
Yeah, and then they have a really long talk, the two of them, where he has to explain everything that he knows.
Well, because he explains the fact that, you know, it's because of her death in space that causes her granddaughter, Susie, to want to explore the cosmos. And, you know, it's her children and then her children's children. And, you know, they create a new species. And mm-hmm. he offers that to her as a consolation prize.
Yeah, the consolation of getting to know all of this.
Yeah.
But it
was after that, because that happens when they're investigating the glacier, the water.
Mm-hmm.
It's after they have this talk and he reveals to her that he's a Time Lord, that he's then walking out and it turns into the longest, like, it's like listening to the black box of a plane that crashed, where you can hear everything and everybody, knowing full well, like, this is moments before these people die.
Like the doctor's long, long walk back to the TARDIS.
Yeah. And even getting so much as, or, and even being thrust forward as the base begins to explode,
mm-hmm.
or as the rocket explodes and then, you know, the base starts.
Yeah. And
exploding.
I will say, cause they could, they, I don't, I can't imagine they were playing anything for David Tennant there.
No.
Because it's not like you can just have someone off to the side going.
I mean, they might.
Because, I mean, I can totally understand when they were having the dialogue scenes, because they were having those in two different areas, that they were having someone read the opposite lines to them so they could continue acting. But in this case, David Tennant gets nothing. He's just in his suit and he plays it. And it's one of, and those two scenes are just evidence of how good David Tennant is as an actor.
Mm-hmm.
Where he's either acting against no one because he's just basically monologuing to the camera, and the other person's going to read their lines later, or at a different time at least. And then this other time where he's got nothing to go off of at all, he just knows what is supposed to be playing in his ear and just looks so defeated.
I mean, David Tennant has sad boy eyes. So he plays defeated and sad boy very well.
And it is kind of interesting that he walked so far to the TARDIS and then turned around.
He didn't just finish walking to the TARDIS and then
swooping in, yeah.
Take the TARDIS back into where they are.
Yeah, that felt a little strange. I felt like the doctor would have been like, oh, I should, because eventually his resolution is just to send Gadget out for the TARDIS, which on the one hand, kind of a fun bit. And as I said, thematically important that he know how, that there's this, that now he is willing to put something beneath him in the way that he detested humans for doing. But also just kind of funny that you watch him do this. And you're like, there is no way you could make Gadget so accurate that he would get a key and a key hold on the first try.
That robot is way too clunky. I would say that about the first iteration of Gadget, but I feel like after the doctor's upgrades, he can zoom down a corridor so fast it leaves flames behind him. I think he can get a key in a keyhole.
I mean, I think he could get the key in the hole. I just can't imagine it would be like fine-tuned enough he could do it the first try.
It would take him less than 20 seconds to do so.
And I like Gadget going into the TARDIS. And I picture a Gadget like going around the console all fast like David Tennant does.
I always thought that there were stairs. I guess it is just a ramp.
I believe it is a ramp, yes.
Even still, steep ramp. That fool would have rolled backwards.
Gadget, help. Gadget, help.
Go, Gadget, help me.
And then David Tennant's like, oh, man. And the whole thing blows up with him in it. Again, I'm a little upset that the Time Lord Victoria stuff had to get dropped so quickly.
Yeah, because I really like it. it's very good boy goes bad.
Yeah, well, there's a lot you could do there, and obviously there is because the as I said, the audio dramas took.
There's a lot to unpack with that too, and he literally like just touches the tip of the iceberg by saying that he is the last of his kind. He is the last of the Time Lords. Therefore, the rules of times need not apply to him because there is nobody else to hold or to hold those standards or to maintain those standards. It's cool.
You know, because of this big dramatic turn, it feels like it's going to be this thing that lasts a while. And then Adelaide commits suicide. And immediately the doctor's like, oh, no, what have I done? I can't do this anymore. And then immediately after that, Ood Sigma shows up.
Yeah.
Singing his at him.
Yeah.
To which the doctor's like, is it time? Is this when I die? And I do appreciate that there's still a glimmer of it when he gets back into the TARDIS and he's like, nope, not right now. It's not. I'm not dying right now. And he flies away. But before that, the Ood Sigma just fades away. Raises the question as to how the hell he's doing that, huh?
Yeah, a little bit.
But I guess we'll have to find out about that on the next episode of Who Is My Doctor?
Ood is my doctor. Got him.
Well, next week is very dramatic because next week is the end of time.
Whoa.
That's right. David Tennant's finale is super dramatic because it calls itself The End of Time.
Yeah, and it's two parts.
It is two parts. So we'll see you next time. Anyway, Who Is My Doctor?
Brought to you by Chris Checks.
Who is indeed, I guess. This episode was kind of weird. I just feel like we were all over the place, though that's probably just because Waters of Mars puts you in kind of a weird place. Not as weird as next week's episode will, as we finally finish the 10th Doctor's run on the show. Sort of. We're going to be doing a series of mini-sodes on Dreamland, the animated shorts that star the 10th Doctor. I'd considered doing a proper episode on them, especially because when put together, they're about the length of a regular episode anyway. But I really like ending Tennant's run on our 50th episode. Plus, I've never actually watched Dreamland before. Not for lack of trying, it's just ugly as sin, and that makes it very difficult to watch unless I have some kind of incentive, like this podcast. But it is important that we check it out, partly because someone on Twitter requested it, and partly because the companion in that episode is also named Cassie. So if you want to hear that, be sure to subscribe to this podcast. And if you'd like to request future minisodes, you can follow us on Twitter, Blue Sky Threads, and Instagram at WIMDPod. That's WIMDPOD. Like I said, next week is our 50th episode on the 10th Doctor's absolutely buck wild finale, The End of Time. So we'll see you next Tuesday, because your Tuesdays are now Who's Days.